so fuck you list. I got all this whole analysis. You know, don't let this fuck you all over. Because the analysis are fuck you all over.
Okay.
Because you make it loose and copy it and release space for it. Thank you. But don't worry. You don't let it copy it.
Okay.
And also a very warm welcome to our Honourable Minister for Social Development, Mayor Edna Bulewa, and also the Counseling Officer of the Department, as well as your colleagues from the National Development Agency, and I'm sure you've both been with your and a especially warm welcome from the board member from my home province. I'm not biased, but she's my home girl. On the agenda this morning, honourable members, we have, and also, also a warm welcome to the Justice team from the Department of Social Development. On the agenda, honourable members, we have a briefing by the National Development Agency, the NDA, on the budget and the strategic plan. And the second item on the agenda is the briefing by the Department of Social Development on their state of readiness to implement the Child Justice Act. I'm sure that was an issue that was also raised at the last committee meeting. But before we start off with the briefing, I just want to confirm whether all members received the contact details of the regional executive managers of SASA. And then also the summary of fraud cases from 2005 to date. Members have received that. If not, you could please just collect some copies from the committee secretary. Then, Honourable Minister, if you look at the agenda, we've got the two items. Would you like to introduce the items yourself and the accounting officer? We're going to start off with the NDA.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and thanks for the opportunity to present our strategic plan of National Development Agency to yourselves. We do believe indeed that it is necessary that, as it is required by the law, that we on an annual basis present a strat plan which talks to our objectives, intentions, and programs that we will be implementing throughout this year. And naturally, the MTFF, through the MTEF as well as the MTESF. We have before you, honorable members, copies of the strat plan itself, as well as the presentation that will be tabled in a slide form, presentation form. We therefore would like honourable members to read, to look at the slide presentation together with the presentation itself, as quite a lot of detail is contained in the threat plan itself to cross-reference. However, the presenter, who is the acting CEO, will also do the same and keep referring to those areas as well for better understanding and easier understanding. We have with us here today the management from NGA as well as the department, but also from NGA led by some of our members of the board, the deputy chairperson who's here with us. So it's really the entire team from the department, NGA as well, that's here to speak to yourself. We have been to a strategic planning session. We believe that we have quite adequately aligned our vision with the vision and current vision of our government, as we'll be presenting, you'd note that, so that we all can actually contribute through NGA to the objectives and imperatives of our government and the needs of our people. As you know, honourable members, this is quite a strategic institution for us that really does deals with issues of poverty in particular, which is quite a burning issue in our nation today. And we believe that this stretch plan will help us really deal with those issues to a large extent. But as we all know also that we are not working in NGA and in DSD alone, but working with other departments and other institutions in concert, which will also be shown as we proceed. So without any further ado, Honourable Chair, I would like to indicate that we are going to be presenting and would like through you to hand over. I'm not sure if board chairperson or deputy chair will say something, but the presentation would then be done by the acting CEO. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. Good morning, everybody. All protocols observed. Chairperson, we went through quite a long process with a strategic effort to get to this strategy. We had discussions internally. We had discussions with civil society and NGOs. We had a session with the department itself, and we looked at the department's strategy, and it influenced our strategy. And that's how we got to this current strategy. Our focus, basically, when I start the presentation, I also want to speak about a visit that the portfolio committee had, but prior to that, I want to
just introduce your team to us and also the members of the board before you go into the presentation.
Sorry, Chairperson. I've got with me our deputy chairperson, Marshall Manol, from our board. We've got our HR executive with us, Sam DeWatley, and we have a provincial manager, Nsako, with us. She's from the Mpumalanga area where the portfolio committee went to visit some of our projects. And what we focused on is basically some priorities, but also not only the five focus areas of government priorities, but like I said, also the DSD's focus areas and priorities, and also the strategic goals and objectives. We tried to focus in on certain areas, and NGA was largely in the past considered. We focused on agricultural food security projects. From next year, we're going to not only focus on those things, but we're going to focus on ECG areas. We used to do those, focus on those areas, but from now, this year, next year on, we're going to concentrate a lot more and try and synergize and dovetail with DSD and see how we can assist those ECG sites. We're also going to do vulnerable groups, Chairperson, and when I take you through the presentation, I will tell you on what page, I will refer to the page where it is, how we define vulnerable groups and what we're going to do within those vulnerable groups. But before I start that, I wanted to, the portfolio committee went to go visit some of our projects in the Mpumalanga area, and some of the questions raised and issues that they told NDA to follow up and partner with some departments, and I just wanted to give some feedback
on those visits, and I've got the provincial manager here, and some slides on that if you don't mind just indulging, giving us a few moments so that we can go through that and give you feedback on that visit, please. I'll be open to Nsako.
Thank you, Chairperson, Minister, and all the protocol of that. Chairperson, we had a pleasure to host the portfolio committee last year in the week of the 23rd to the 27th of November. The portfolio committee visited two projects from our province, and the projects that were visited were triple option furniture making project and the Lukusa Sale 2 leather fan project. The first project, which is triple option, was approved to the tune of 723,520,000, and they received all the money. This project is based in Enhlanzeni district and within the Mbombela municipality, and under the Isof Kwaba traditional authority. This project, Chairperson, was established in April 2002 by a group of young men and women. They started manufacturing furniture on rented premises, but they didn't have enough money to have their own premises. We approved that amount that I mentioned earlier, and they were able to secure their own place where they are currently manufacturing furniture. The project has currently created 37 jobs, and they are making an income of 50,000 rand per month. They have expanded their activities from furniture making to brick making, meaning that there's some sort of a supply chain, because they manufacture bricks and they manufacture furniture, things such as doors, which they supply to Mica. Mica is a wholesaler that supply furniture and other household equipment to people. So they are able to manufacture bricks and manufacture doors at the same time. They are currently supplying a contractor who's building houses, RDP houses, for the government. So they are both supplying bricks and doors at the same time. The portfolio committee, during their visit, made recommendations after they made certain observations on the project. One observation was related to the marketing of the product. The first recommendation that was made was that the NDA should assist the project team to get a contract from the Department of Education, which means they have to get a contract to repair desks and furniture in government schools. We made a research around that, and the response that we got from the department is that they have to go through the tendering process. So what we said is we are going to assist the project to package their proposal so that they can get a preferential treatment from government, because we know this project, we've been working with them and we know their potential. So we are going to assist them in terms of packaging their proposal. The second recommendation that was made was that they should do the same with the Department of Health. The proposal has been developed. We are still working with them in terms of developing it further and in order to meet the standards that are needed for them to qualify as a tenderer for government. Another observation was that their showroom is too small. The furniture cannot fit into that showroom that they are currently using. So we are still assisting them in order to secure a place which is accessible and still affordable for them in town, in Nelspruit. So that is work in progress. The second project that was visited by the portfolio committee chairperson is Likusa Sale 2 leather fence. It's also based in Enhlanzeni district, but in the Nkomazi municipality. We gave the money to the tune of 1,990,081 rand. The project is producing leather pens. It's a plant which is mainly used for decorations and flowers. If you've seen the bouquet, there's a plant. It looks like it's a fan, some type of a fan. So that plant is, the project is exporting that plant to the Netherlands and also locally to Interflora in Joburg. They are currently employing, they've created 60 permanent jobs. And the recommendations that were made by the portfolio committee, or the concerns that were raised, is that the marketing of the product is only done by Mr. Brass. Mr. Brass is the former owner of that farm, which is producing that plant. So he controls everything, the marketing, the exporting. So the portfolio committee was concerned that the project members are not empowered to do that function themselves. We are currently talking to the MADC, which is the Mpumalanga Agricultural Development Corporation, with regard to the marketing aspect of the project, and we have made progress in terms of that, because the MADC were able to bring a flower expert from Holland, where the project is exporting their products. That person was brought in to come and assess the value of the plant and how much should those people be getting out of that plant. And then we managed to secure quotations from other marketing specialists who are currently assisting with that. So I would say that we have made progress in terms of that, and hopefully next time we'll report on the progress that we have been made. And then another issue that was raised was that they need new shade doors on the farm, and they requested the NDA to assist them in acquiring new ones. The NDA has noted their request, but at the same time, Chairperson, we would like to see them self-reliant. We don't want them to be dependent on us. We would like to see them generating income and be able to sit down and draw a budget and say that we can purchase those things ourselves. So we are assisting them in that regard as well. That's the end of my presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Just before I give back to the NDA, would members like to comment on the first part of the presentation before we proceed to the strat plan? Yes, is that yes? A yes? Okay. Honourable Member Namula and then Mahas.
Thank you, Chair. When we visited this project in November, and this is now on the triple option furniture making project, definitely these people are doing wonderful work. Even the padded spreads that they are making is export quality. But one can have the best projects, and that is where I'm a bit disappointed in NDA, coming back today 3 months later, nearly 4 months, still trying to tell us now that they are busy searching for an accessible, affordable showroom. These people's goods you need to help them to get into a showroom. I know that some of our members were even suggesting that they go to, I think they're working for Micah, go to one of the furniture stores and see if they can get their products into the furniture stores, because, you know, they're selling these padded spread sets for about 2,000, it's worth 3,500 the way they're doing it. And yet they do not have a market. I think NDA need to assist the projects to first get a market before starting making items to sell. Their project definitely is of very high quality. And I would urge you people to try and get these people into a showroom, a visible showroom, where they can have, where people, where the community, or where the community of the towns can have access to their product, so that they can, that is why they cannot afford to do things on their own. They have an income of 50,000, they can even have an income of 100,000, because the markup on these items are very high. It's highly marked up items that they're producing, yet they do not have a market. I would like NDA now to tell us what time frame they will be putting to this to get these people into at least, I don't know what the problem is. Is it perhaps a vacant storeroom or showroom? What is the problem that you cannot get these people into an accessible showroom to be able to market them and sell at the same time their product? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I was concerned about the marketing too, because I didn't see it here, although it was in our recommendation. And then the other question that I'd like to ask is, where is the brickmaking? Because we saw the whole project, but we didn't see the brickmaking at all that you have included here. And then, no, that's all. I'm not going to speak about the fern project. Yeah, the project. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just a comment that we are happy at least they have got something and there's something that has been done. So we are just asking them to do more on the project. We are not saying we are not doing anything, because to look for accommodation is a process. Some are long-term, some are short-term processes. But if we can prioritize them, then if the mode is needed. I was just commenting them for if there's something that they are doing.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member Mafolo. Honorable Member Pula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, there is a very profound saying that if you give a person a fish, you feed him for a day. If you teach him to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. I think we must commend the NTA for the initiative in monitoring the various projects. But what is of utmost importance is ensuring that there is self-sustainability. Are there any challenges that the NDA foresee in the regular visits to these projects that are encountered by these people? One. Two. You made reference to engaging with them to ensure that they fall in line with processes of tendering and acquiring projects that are self-sustainable, that will add an impetus in the marketing expertise. Have you brought them in line in terms of the processes and for them to be knowledgeable so that they would deal with this aspect? Ultimately, the knowledge industry, the skills industry, is of uttermost importance to deal with many challenges, unemployment, skill development, and etc. And I think that is very, very important. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Member Pula. All the other members covered? I think the members touched on very important issues, especially the marketing element, which then links with the sustainability issue. What I think the initiatives that NDA has taken in terms of acting on the recommendations of the committee is commendable. But I think that what we would also like to see is a skills transfer issue for people working on the project. Now, if I look at the firm project, we're going to bring in someone from Holland to perform due diligence on the project, and then looking at alternative marketing, at engaging an alternative marketing specialist. But I think there should be, for the people working on the project, if one or two people could be identified to be orientated or skilled in marketing training,
I think that's gonna have just cement the issue of ownership in the project, which is good. But I think what the NDA should explore with the project committees in the different projects is how to engage the DTI in terms of, because I see no issue of web page design of websites, and that is where you get your business from. If you have a website, you're out there, people international, you can access more than one international market, even national markets. And I think that is very important. I'm sure there is programs available. I'm sure, Minister, even through your engagement with corporates, the corporate investment strategy, that could be one of the issues. If you look at Microsoft's program, projects that they have into the social corporate investment. So I think those are the avenues that you could explore. And also getting them on board with the tourism expo, whether it's in the province, whether it's nationally or internationally. I think that's really important. But we want these projects, I'm sure you want these projects to make money, so that people can graduate and go into the broader economy and you get other people on board. Because you're not in the business of creating business, corporate companies, you're there for projects to alleviate poverty. So I'm sure if we look a bit wider, while keeping your mandate, keeping to the mandate you've been given, but really getting the product of Mpumalanga out there into the world, I think that's really important. I think the issue of I thought the members also visited a cane farm, a sugar cane farm, or did I imagine that? Yeah, a leather farm. Oh, the leather farm. Okay. And the furniture. Okay. Now, but furthermore, I think the presentation is fine. And I think we, the committee, is satisfied that you're taking the recommendations of the committee seriously. That is very gratifying. Would you respond to the questions about us now, please?
There's a question that was raised by Honorable Lamola regarding the space, the showroom space. We were looking at a place which is central, the CBD, preferably the CBD area. And currently it is difficult to secure a space which will be accessible and which will be visible enough for them to showcase their products. But we are really trying. We are trying to look for a space, and hopefully we're going to secure something very soon. The issue that was raised by Honorable Malhas on the brick making project. It's a new, I think on the presentation we've mentioned that it's a new thing that they have ventured into. So when you went to the project site, it was not there. But now they have started with the brick making. This I think they started in January. It's a new venture. I will hand over to the CEO.
Chairperson, I want to speak a bit about the marketing and challenges we experience. With regard to the marketing, we're trying to get a national MOU with DTI, and we are in negotiations with Nadia, a chief director in the DTI, especially with overseas. She deals with overseas markets and how we can target those markets, and they will do it on our behalf. And so we're trying to secure that issues around it, but there are issues because the product needs to be of a certain quality, etc. So she's got offices in the provinces, so we're negotiating with them, and those provinces are going to visit our provinces and projects to see what can be done in which projects. We also have an issue, and sometimes, let's say an example of piggery, the quality of the pigs that comes out, and the chickens and the eggs are also an issue for us. So we're trying to improve. We've got MOUs with associations like the Pigsy Associations, etc., the agricultural. There's quite a few of them that we've got MOUs, and we're working on MOUs to ensure that, and the food banks actually, to ensure that when the projects have excess, and some of them are just for sustainability, and if they have excess cabbages and carrots, they sell it to those associations and they guarantee a price for them. There's also issues around, we've got one in Cape Town, a mushroom farm, where farmers, where we secure contracts with certain suppliers, and this is a Chinese mushroom, which is a cell that will work for 200 rand a kilo. But when it comes to the people supplying our project supplying the supplier, they don't pay. So we have to get involved in those contractual obligations where people just, they collect the mushrooms from our farmers and they don't pay our farmers because there's nobody else to sell it to, etc. So we've got issues and we're working on those issues, but our aim is to get associations involved. Our aim is to get the DTI involved, and we are obviously working on that one, and we will continue giving you feedback with regards to that. And when we do PPS, when they approve our projects, PPS has, we internally recognize this problem, and we have got stringent measures, and the board, when they assess these projects, to look at the marketing of that project first. Is the marketing, now recently in the last 2-3 years, if the marketing of those projects are not sustainable, we send it back, and it must be part of the business plan, the marketing. So we recognize these issues, we're trying to deal with it internally by addressing when it's at the proposal stage yet, so that DMs, PMs, and staff internally have got this flair for what is, how we're going to sell. It's fine making shoes, children's leather shoes, children's, but it's to sell the product is a problem afterwards. We recognize the chair, we're working on it, and we're trying to resolve the problem from the beginning of the project building. With regards to challenges, the skills, our first goal, and you'll see, is capacity building. 3 years ago, the DSD department gave us 27 million rand for capacity building. That money has been spent. And we not only gave intermediary civil society NGOs that teach other NGOs, but with also each project that comes to the board, we identify what skills are required to implement that project. So prior to the approval of the project, do we go and say, I think this project is going to need financial governance training, it's going to need computer skills, etc., etc. So at that level, in the project, we try and identify what skills are going to be needed for the project, and we put budget for it in the budget prior to the approval of the project. And at some time, there are projects that we really think will not work if the skills aren't given first. So before we give the money for the capacity building, for the training, and then we give the first tranche. So there are sometimes the board sets conditions, but yes, we are also quite aware of knowledge, skills, on-the-job training. What the NDA has also developed is a mentorship program. And let's say there's a project, we monitor our projects on a semi-monthly basis. And let's say there's a project, a piggery project, a bee farming project, agricultural project that's struggling. We sort of take a project that we know is doing very well in citrus farming or in bee farming or whatever, and we fly the person over there. We make and we sort of allow this person to go and mentor them for a week or two, and we make those mentorship arrangements, and the NDA pays for it as part of our administration budget. It's not part of the direct funding, not to speak about the gap again. So yes, we recognize that we've got constant monitoring going around. We've got challenges in our project, and one of the challenges I also wanted to speak about, because it was asked, the NGA focused mostly on the rural areas, and as you know, we didn't have good education in the rural areas in the past. For an old lady of 63 to learn to know how to do a budget, because that's what's required when you do a project, it's cumbersome. We've got to train the person, we've got to mentor the person, we've got to guide the people, we've got to see that it's okay. They don't. It's difficult for people to understand why I have to keep my receipts, for instance. And when a GM comes there, there's no receipts, and they've just given cash and checks for loans, etc. We've got to, and it's time-consuming to teach communities, NGOs, civil societies, how to run a business. It is not a natural element in South Africa to have entrepreneurial skills. We have to convey those entrepreneurial skills, and it takes patience, it takes time, efforts, because of the localities of our projects. If it was in the cities, maybe it would be easier, but some of our projects, we travel 3 days and 2 days and sleep over to get to those projects because they are such a big distance. Northwest, KZN, we've got one office. It's located in Durban and Kimberley, etc. And we have to travel to those destinations, which is time-consuming, Chairperson. So, yes, we do have huge problems in our projects. We're trying to overcome them. Chairperson, we spend money on governance. We spend money on training, financial training. We've got a software system that we implemented in all projects to show them how to do their books. So we try to get these, not to as an efficient business, but to uplift that community to know how to do, how to run a business, and for them to carry on further. I must also let you know that our business is to give projects money over a period of time. So we don't just give projects money and let it go. We pay them once, first tranche, and then after monitoring and evaluation, we'll go to pay them a second tranche. So the idea is we don't just leave them, but after the 3 years, after our funding has left, we still go and visit those projects because we do a closeout report, we do an impact assessment on those projects. So there's post-funding support also that we give the project. And it's important that you note that, because it costs the NGA a lot of money to do that, but we don't get any return. So, Jefferson, I think I covered all the questions, if there are any.
I just want to mention something just for one of the projects that we visited. I remember it was really in the rural, remote rural areas. The grandmummies and grandmothers from Amakoba. And I want to differ with what the lady just said, that people do not know how to do bookkeeping or how to keep their receipts. Perhaps how to write a business plan, which is the duty of the NDA to teach people or to communicate with them. But this mama could immediately tell us what the bank balance was, what they spent, remember? And I remember because of this, the members clubbed together and we gave them a couple of thousand, 2,000 or 3,000 for their Christmas party because of them doing it so very well. And this was really the remote rural areas that we were visiting. So I want to differ and I want to say it is the will to succeed, to do or to better yourself that we must work on. Thank you.
Can we get into the presentation?
Okay.
want to explain that the presentation, you've got a hard copy of the presentation, but it also refers to the strategic document, and you also have a copy of the strategic document on your table. I've also made references to pages in the strategic document, so when I speak, we can maybe go to those strategic to those pages and get further detail from it. Jefferson, the NDA's primary mandate, I think we spoke about how we got to this stage of our and the approved strategies, but that the mandate of the NDA is we've got a primary mandate and a secondary mandate. The primary mandate basically is to contribute towards the eradication of poverty and its causes by granting funds to civil society for the purpose of carrying one, is to carry out projects and programs. This directly will be in Goal 2. You will see that this comes out strongly in our Goal 2 and our strategic objectives in Goal 2. Strengthening the institutional capacity of the civil society organizations. And this primary mandate is directly related to our Goal 1, and you will see that we do a lot of capacity building and we spend lots of money on strengthening the institutional capacity and assisting the civil society in training, skills development, on-the-job training, governance, finance, etc. Our secondary mandate is consultation around poverty, development issues, dialogue, sharing information with civil societies and the state of August of State. The idea here is for us, the NDA, to be a middleman, to bring civil society and the state together and for them, the state to know what's happening in the civil societies. We see our role here as a communication role, but also to look after civil society. We recognize that civil society is a strong bond. We've got a history with civil society now in our country. We can't leave civil society out in the cold. We have to fund them. They are struggling, and we recognize that we have to maintain these organizations. We also don't consider ourselves just as a grant-making organization. We consider ourselves as a keeper of civil society in general, civil society organizations and NGOs in general, and we want to increase and improve the state which they find themselves in. And in so doing, we're going to look after to the people on the ground and the needy people, the people that's poor, the people that don't have food. We also have a mandate, a sector mandate, to debate on public and development issues and to undertake the research and publications aimed at providing the basis of development policy. Our vision didn't change, still the same, a society free from poverty. We're really looking forward to that. Mission, and has changed since last year. It's to facilitate sustainable development by strengthening the civil society involved in poverty eradication through enhanced grant funding and research. Here again, you can see our mandate coming clear through our mission. The values, integrity, respect, excellence, commitment, honesty, and partnering. You will see on our goal, the last goal, goal 5, which is administration. We are looking at our values and having a re-look at what we want to adopt as values, and we're going to actually have a process where we have these values entrenched into all NDA staff. Where I spoke about how we got to the strategy, we used government priorities, the 5 priorities also, and we went further than that and to look at the DSD priorities also. Following that, we also considered the quality basic education. All people in South Africa feel safe, decent employment. That is also when we approve a project, that is one of the things we look at, how many jobs are created, how many beneficiaries directly and indirectly each project gives, and what for what money And when we do our monitoring and evaluation, this is very, very important to us when we do monitoring how many beneficiaries are still there. Because sometimes one of our challenges is people just leave projects and come and go. Once they are trained, they go to another project or they try and look for another job. So the sustainability and the problems with projects is also that sometimes that the main person leaves the project and the project fails. So employment is very important to us. A vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural community contribution towards food security. We haven't left from food security. We're still there. We still think it's important. Create a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. With this, you will see our new strategies to go into the SADC area, not only the NGOs in South Africa and nationally, but also we can learn from other SADC areas. They've got experience and they are there. They've got something to teach us, and maybe we can teach them something. So I'll be planning to do that in our research unit. An efficient, effective, and development-orientated public service and empowered, fair, and inclusive citizens. And that is for the dialogues, information sharing, etc. Okay, so last year we had about 4 goals. This year we have got 5 goals. And the first goal is to build the capacity of civil societies to enable them to carry out development work effectively. The purpose of this goal is to strengthen the capacity of civil societies. Again, you must know this is directly with our mandate, and it's in line with the Department of Social Development mandate. Our strategic objective here, we've got a few strategic objectives, and I refer you to our document, our strategy document, page 22. Here, our strategic objective is to build institutional capacity of civil society, but in the outputs are leadership and management capacity, not skills management, leadership and management capacity of not only civil society, but also the cooperatives. In 3 areas. So we're going to do leadership and knowledge management and skills transfer in ECDs, in vulnerable groups, and in rural development. So there are 3 focus areas that we're going to support this year, coming year. So the ECD sites, the rural development, and also on page 24, the NDA defines vulnerable groups as gender-based violence groups, child abuse and neglect, HIV/AIDS, elderly persons, people with disability, youth development and empowerment. We're also looking at volunteers this year and how we can strengthen volunteer groups and how we can get additional volunteers in each of our projects and train them. It's important not only to have the volunteers but also them be trained. They can look for jobs afterwards, etc. So in the first goal, we have leadership skills, leadership and management capacity, and we have knowledge and skills. ECD, in the ECDs, we have in the vulnerable groups and in rural development. So I will go back. The last one under this goal is to support intermediary NGOs and CBOs that contribute to poverty eradication. And this you will find on page 22 is 1.17. Intermediary, we define intermediary civil societies and NGOs as the NGOs that train other NGOs or that develop skills and that have skills in the health sector, in the looking after children, etc. So we are going to support those intermediary NGOs to train other smaller NGOs where required. This process will be done through our normal governance structure. The board will be approving these projects. We look for those projects. We find the proposal, do the business plan, due diligence, etc., and it goes to our board for consideration and approval. And I must say, Jefferson, this process of approval is stringent. The board don't just approve projects. They send provincial managers back. They'll do more work, ensure that this is going to be done They even insist on seeing partnerships in each project with the province, but with municipalities and provinces, so that we don't just fund in isolation, but we also fund with provinces and we partner with provinces. So the board is quite strict on these issues. Then we go to goal two, Chairperson. So that was the capacity building part of it. Now we're going to the grant funding, which you will remember is also one of our primary mandates, grant funding not only for projects but for programs. This goal to grant funds to contribute towards the eradication of poverty. The purpose of it is to promote and facilitate sustainable development through funding to civil society organizations. Please note that it's not only civil society, but we also extended our mandate to cooperatives here also. To promote funding to civil society, the strategic objective here is to promote funding to implement interventions, funding for geographical and social poverty nodes. In poverty nodes, we the NDA identify with municipalities and the IDP what are the areas we have to focus on. We decide on those areas and we grant funds to those. Each provincial manager, with the little money we've got, we allocate certain funds depending on the poverty statistics of SARS, and we've got a formula to say that this province is going to get that amount of money and this province gets certain amount of money, and then we grant according to those. Output year, again, we're looking at the rural development areas of in projects. We're looking at ECD sites. We're looking at vulnerable groups. So that's goal two, goal three. Now we come to the secondary mandate of our act. And our secondary mandate has got to do with research, dialogue, consultation, etc. And it will come out here. Goal three, to facilitate research towards poverty eradication. The purpose here is to provide evidence-based knowledge to improve development practice and inform policy. Our strategic objective is to promote the role of civil society in public policy debates. We want to go further with this. We want to partner with DSD and say, if you have any policy any policies that needs to be debated, let us assist in doing those policies for you. We can share funds. This is what we have to do. We go to other departments also. What the NDA is doing this year is not just focusing on the money that they get, but also trying to extend the RAND by partnering with other government organizations, not only DSD, but other governments, that rural development, for instance. Our objective here is also to promote the civil society in the SADC region, as I spoke. We want to share knowledge. We want to know what's happening in other areas. We know that they're strong in the SADC region. How can we learn from them? What can they learn from us? How can we partner? Also, to generate and disseminate relevant development information. Poverty, at times, people just want to put poverty behind them. We don't want to recognize it. It's for the NDA to put it in the face of everybody to know that poverty exists in South Africa. Poverty is real. We have to do something about poverty. And when we get the private sector, public involved, we might fight this animal that we have. So we want to disseminate. We want to generate information. We've got lots of information. We've got projects that work for us. We've got projects that didn't work for us. Why didn't it work, etc. It's information that we can disseminate and share with other NGOs, the public, and relevant stakeholders. Number four, to identify constraints and needs of civil society involved in poverty eradication. Civil society has problems. We did a research on civil society issues and what needs to be resolved. Annually, there are civil society that get deregistered. Huge issues in civil society, conflict issues in civil society, cooperatives, huge issues that we try and resolve. And again, I want to say this is money that we use to assist NGOs, not direct funding, but it comes from our administration budget, the city objective that I'm speaking about. To compile and analyze current, accurate, and relevant knowledge on scope and geographic distribution of civil societies, I had a meeting yesterday with an NGO who wants to develop sort of a scale on what and how civil societies are. So she wants to have key factors on what type of CSO, civil societies there are. Is it a letter and maybe color-coded? And if it is a green, you know, everything is done. They are above board. Government can go and do business with them. Everything is ticked. They've got documents in place, etc. The board governance is in place. So we are working with other NGOs to assist us in developing instruments and tools to tell us where NGOs are, who are the good ones, and introduce it to the public and government to say, do business with these people, assist them to measure performance and impact of the NDA-funded projects. Here is, again, internally of our projects. And here is also a tool where we have to say, what was the impact on this project? It's very difficult. In private sector, you have return on investment. You have all sorts of formulas and that you can measure what your returns are for that specific amount of money. Here, it's a bit difficult for the NDA to do that. And we've developed, we've got now baseline studies for all our projects. And after, so we do monitoring and evaluation in between. And after the project is closed or we stop funding, we do closeout reports. And then we do impact studies and to say, from where the project was initially, what is there now? What can still be done? We also developed a sustainability fund where our old project still needs a top-up. An example of it was like a 20,000 rand netting in one of our projects. Then we go for that money is put away, that direct project funding is put away, and we allow small amounts of money to top them up. But they must also contribute towards that netting maybe, or just a car or something. So we go 50-50 to see how we can improve the condition. Also, we're going in partnership with banks to have to fund projects and other organizations, to fund projects prior the NDA's involvement, to push them a bit further if they're required. We must keep in mind projects. If you start a business, you can't see profits. The first and second year, you expect profit after that 2 years. So the same with projects. You can't just drop them, leave them, and move out. We've got to see how we can assist them afterwards. The goal is still outputs dialogues. I spoke about regional dialogues in the SADC region, publication of case studies. These are internal, and also tells you what case studies are, what we call, what happened in our projects. These are projects, but this one failed because of this reason, that one did exceptionally well because of those reasons, so that other people can learn from us. Reports to inform geographic, demographic, socioeconomic targets, also that's from the IDP, etc., where the NDA focuses on information on development correlates, information on development collated and disseminated. This is again statistics. What we have, what we need. One of the things the NGA is going to try and see is a definition maybe on poverty. I don't think anybody wants to touch a definition on poverty in South Africa. And what factors contribute to poverty and what we consider poverty. It's a debate. It's a tough one. So we want to see how we're going to get that, and that's on our business plan this year. Outputs also study on the constraints, problems, and challenges facing into CSOs, like the question was asked. They have plenty. We can do plenty to assist them, and that's our job. That's what we're trying to do. Knowledge information on scope and geographic distribution of civil societies. The NDA is not only there to assist them, but, you know, when we find a rural community in some area and there's no civil society, but there might be a church, it's the NDA to go and develop those people into an organized individual. And that's what our mandate. Our mandate closes us a bit. We don't work with individuals, but it says a group of individuals, like a NGO, faith-based source. We want to move away from that, but our mandate is still very close, and we're looking at changing our act a bit on that. But yet, we're very aware of that is for us to assist people to become organized individuals, to help that society and that community out of poverty. And that is our aim, to get that community out of poverty. It's a struggle sometimes to get them into an organized individual. There's conflict, there's this, there's that, but we try in the end. So, close out impact and sustainability reports on funded projects, I spoke about that, monitoring and evaluation. Critical for the NDA. With monitoring and evaluation, the AG internal audit extremely strict on what issues must, when you go, what was the objective of that project? Are they doing? Take photos. In fact, we have to have photos of how the project progressed, and that must be done before the next tranche. If there's any conditions set by the board, have it been met? Have they done their budget? Huge requirements when doing these monitoring and evaluation. The idea is not to leave projects. The idea is to teach them governance and corrective action. That is the idea, to put them on a path of corrective action. Budgeted baseline studies undertaken. All projects in the NDA for the past 3-4 years, I think, three definitely, but maybe four, we are doing baseline studies prior to the approval of projects. So, and the NGO might decide that we're going to do an agricultural project in the desert. We're not just going to fund that. We're going to guide them. That's our task. You can't do agriculture, but maybe you can do goat farming in this area. And so the baseline informs us that this project is viable, it's not viable. These are the issues that we might foresee in these projects. So we undertake those baseline studies. Goal 4, to position the NDA as a premier development agency and mobilize resources. That's what we want to do. If you think of development, if you think of poverty, if Parliament think of it, NDA must come to the forefront. We want to let everybody know this is what the NDA do. We can assist in poverty alleviation. If you have any funds, come and speak to us. Let us know. We can distribute those funds. We can assist you in development. Our minister often says that we can't work in isolation in eradicating poverty. It is for us to partner as government and private sector and make a bigger impact in poverty. In isolation, we're going to get nowhere. So please partner with us. We're here. This is what this goal is trying to do. Just to let you know that we are here. We are the people that will eradicate poverty, and we're positioning ourselves as such. And the purpose of it is to position the NDA, raise funds and reduce resources for development. Unfortunately, our budget was cut by 42% for next year. It's a huge sum. 70-odd million rand was taken away from us. There's nothing we can do now. We're just going to have to raise the funds. If we are serious about eradicating poverty, we must be serious about raising funds, our profile, and getting out there and partnership with other government organizations. We're in numerous MOUs, MIAs, agreements with other government departments as to how we can impact and make a difference and raise funds. Some of the departments, we know it's March again, it's again fiscal dumping. It's again, we've got money left, we didn't spend money, the NDA is there to help and assist to distributing those money. Our strategic objective here and the goal 4 is to enhance the profile of the NDA, to become a development partner of choice, to leverage resources and raise funds from identified sources. Our output here is a well-recognized, and it's again on page 33 to 34, a well-recognized NDA, network of donors, funders, government, civil societies, created and maintained. So we want to speak to each other. We want to create that awareness, establish partnership, with identified sources, funds raised and I get from identified sources and government organizations. Our mandate actually also tells us that funds for development must come through the NGA from government. And empowerment, this is new. We want to create an empowerment endowment fund for sustainability and for society. So the idea is to have funds and sort of just donate the interest. But we're working on this proposal and partnership in this one. Goal 5 is an internally focused administrative goal. And here we want to, as you know, we have had 3-4 unqualified audits. We're doing quite well in governance. The department can let you know our budget strategy, our quarterly reports are within on time, every time. And so we're doing well where that is concerned. Yet we feel we can do better. Yet we feel that we can be more efficient. Goal 5 is to promote and maintain organizational excellence and sustainability. The purpose of it is to enhance and implement business systems to operate efficiently, effectively, and economically. Our objective here is to improve efficiency of internal systems and services, create preferential employment opportunities for specified people with disabilities. The NGA has been lacking, and we do have issues around disability, but I would like you to know that we are working on it and we have employed two disabled people at head office so far. For 100 people, our target is 2%, so we're almost there. Living with NDA values, this project 5.2, what happens is that we've got to create an awareness for people in with disabilities. You can't just employ people with disabilities like we did, but we're also rolling out how we must treat those people, what ergonomics and issues there are around disabled people. So it's a process of educating our internal staff and stakeholders with regards to disabled people. So that's a project of our Living the NGA Values. I think I spoke about it. We're going on a new process to entrench our values in each and every staff member. Outputs here again, page 35 to 37, efficient systems of internal control, cost containment strategy, government can cut costs. We don't travel business class, for instance, we travel all economic class, from the chairperson right down to whoever. There's still room for improvement, you can still cut costs, and the board is very strict with management on that one. All finances, variances, etc. must be explained. Approved organizational structure aligned to the strategy. Again here, we've got a new strategy, we've got new issues. We need to know what skills, what requirements are needed internally. Targeted percentage of people with disabilities, yes. NDA embedded in organizational culture training, the values embedded in the culture training and development, recruitment and performance management. So the values must go through right through to the performance management, and that is our aim. We can't just have deconciliation, but also have a performance management system where the values are entrenched. But go further than that. Maybe having a monthly meeting on a top team for values and see if somebody overstepped the values on a monthly basis or who lived the NDA values well for the month and give a reward maybe. Have that person's picture on the internet or something like that for the month and call that person employer of the month. Some a program like that, but values can be entrenched. We don't want a normal value based, but we want to have a professional value based and responses, etc. So we're working on this project. So that's the end of my sorry that I'm speaking so much. Yeah. So now we come to the budget. The budget, you can see, last year we got 140 odd million rand from Treasury, the transfer from TSD. This year we're only getting 83 million rand. Our budget was cut about 70 million rand, and this was a hard one to swallow for the NDA. make an impact on the poverty, we have to do better than 83 million pounds. Below you see our mandate cost. When it says project funding, 70 million rand, from that 83 million rand, 70 million rand is going directly to projects. So from the 83 million rand that's going to be transferred to NDA, 83 million rand is going directly to the project. From the 83 million rand, 70 million rand is going directly to the project. I want to mention there are other issues that we do directly for funding, like issues I spoke about with regards to conflict resolution in projects, like flying a mentor over to another project. That's administration cost. We do not include it in our direct project funding. I just want to bear you in mind. So our administration cost includes such costs. It includes the cost of visiting a project. We don't include it in our project cost. That is, we bear the cost. So this 70 million rand goes to the coffers of the poor. What I want you to be in my administration cost. The other cost, as you can see, resource mobilization is going to be 20 million rand, targeting 20 million rand. Interest earned on bank balance. What happens there is the NDA paying tranches. So we got that money, it's obligated, it's contractual, and we keep it in our balance sheet. You will see it on our balance sheet, and we keep it in our bank balance. We earn interest on that, and we use that money for administration, though. Part of it would be the conflict resolution, traveling to projects, etc., etc. So that's where the interest comes in. And on an annual basis, this year, we're targeting, we distributed about 110 million rand. But that will come through in the annual report. And that's my presentation, Chairperson. I'll take questions. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Is there anything that the board would like to add at this stage?
Just to say that I think the NDA has improved. I think our strategy, as it has been said, there has been a thorough process in developing the strategy, a very inclusive process, I think. And I think we're moving in the right direction in terms of our strategy, even within the financial constraints. As was said, we're expected to raise an additional 20 million to be able to implement this strategy for the upcoming year. It's something that we must do. It's a must, and the board is part of that participation. Ideally, if we can do better than the 20 million, that's what we'll shoot for, but at least 20 million is the minimum of what we're shooting for this year. Thanks.
Thank you. Honourable members, there's now an opportunity. I don't know whether the minister would like to add anything. Okay. And could we get members?
Honourable Chair, maybe before you do, I'm aware that, let me just put the cart before the horse. I'm aware that this portfolio committee has raised an issue about the matter of the substantive CEO position. I'm not sure if it has been reported previously that the board has processed twice already through normal recruitment process of advertisements, as well as later through the headhunting process, leading up to sometimes late last year. And they have, as it is required in terms of the law, submitted to the executing authority the proposals. We have been looking at the proposals, and as the committee may well know, that there are some requirements that we need to go through. Part of those requirements being to, maybe I should say, recognizing that the role that's played also by the executive authority in consultation with cabinet should do that appointment. I'm not sure, legally speaking, what is after consultation and which is in consultation. But it's really based on the principle in the Constitution of collective responsibility. So that process is underway. The delay was really quite also caused by the fact that we needed to do the necessary screening process, as we know that at this level those posts go through those processes and procedures. So I just thought that we should put the cart before the horse to report that it is a matter of probably days that matter would be quite concluded and delayed to rest finally. We do respect to the decision and the recommendation made by the portfolio committee in the previous committee. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Minister, for that briefing. I think that puts our minds a bit at ease in the matter, but we will be eagerly awaiting the finalization of the matter. Let's kick off the questions, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Denise Robinson. I'm from the Portfolio on Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities, and I want to thank you for your presentation. I like what I hear and the attitudes and so on. I just wondered whether you could perhaps just give me a little bit more information about your projects for people with disabilities, what types of projects, and are there any specific disabilities or people with specific disabilities that you're catering for? But also, I don't know if this is something you can tell me right now, but something I'm concerned about is that very often people with disabilities are put into a position and that's where they stay. They suffer from lack of opportunity, there's no promotion facilities and so on. I just wondered if you were aware of this and able to do anything about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. My first question was the acting CEO situation. But our Minister, thank you for enlightening us on the matter. My second question is, surely you are facing challenges. I'd like to know what you do intend getting, how do you intend getting over those challenges? Because some of those challenges, you are operating now for them. Since 2000, it's the 10th year now. So challenges, more or less, you know, it comes up on a regular basis, but one needs to know how to deal with it. Sustainability of your projects. I'd like to know how this is measured. The presenter spoke on constant monitoring and measuring, and I will elaborate while asking this question. As I go along, I have received a list of NDAs. I think we received it some time ago. All the provinces, projects in all the provinces. The committees asked for the list. And I just took my own province and I called some of the numbers that were contact numbers that were given to us. And truly, monitoring does not happen at all. Some contact numbers told me that projects are, farms are being sold, like the one in the small farmers trust in Tweefontein farm in Wittenberg. The gentleman that was contacted told me nothing is going on there anymore. the farm was sold. I would like to know who sold the farm, to whom was the farm sold. Does NDA know of this? And then, and you know, I'm asking this because Wittenberg is a very, very poor area. It's a very poor area, rife with TB, HIV, AIDS, unemployment, and poverty. And then the other one was in the Taalgrive area, and there people said they were told to open up a bank account 2 years ago, nothing was paid in, and the lady, Nomfundo, her name came up there. Her name also came up in the Tilbach project. That never materialized. Also, they were also asked to open up a bank account 2 years ago, also monies were never paid. I'd like to know if this department is monitoring on a constant basis. How does these things happen? And then in Willeerstok, on the other side, I was told that that project started in 2006, it's now 4 years ago. And then within 4 years' time, at least one works towards sustainability. If the department is monitoring, helping, assisting, evaluating their project, how come that these people are so badly only received thus far half of their money? And they say that it cannot become a sustainable project because of them not receiving assistance from the department. I intend even moving around on all the other projects, as I will be doing next week in some projects in the Eastern Cape. I'd like to know when last was a study or research done to see what impact these projects have on the lives of people or communities, because we're trying to eradicate poverty, and to me it seems people are still trapped in a poverty trap. How many jobs were created in the 9 provinces? Were these jobs sustainable, or are they just temporary? If we start these projects, we at least start these projects to help these people to get out of the poverty net. We already have 30 million people on social grants. So we're trying to get them off that grant, and the Department of Social Development, together with new people, NDA, need to do something about it. Shortfall. There is definitely a shortfall. As you say, your budget has been cut with 42%, which is worrying. It's a worrying factor. How will you now sustain these projects? Do you intend getting private participation? You speak of banks. I would like to know what other private participation. Now let me stop the time. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Chairperson. I had a question here on how you measure impact. Because you said it was difficult. Because I was interested in, you know, the impact NDA has on our community, taking them out of poverty. And then when it comes to disabled, your percentage at the moment, and then I think what will be important is you speak about the leadership and management capacity of CSOs involved in providing support to the vulnerable group. To spend that, what type of support are you giving? That's only that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is only how do the NDA fund this project? Maybe if you give a project 1 million, do you give them one sock, or do you monitor the group, give them quarterly or what? I don't know. How do you fund, give them money? And then the other thing on page 41, on your strategic planning, NDA Human Capital Performance Grade, I just want to know, it's a fair program, but we don't understand how many females, how many males, because we are gender sensitive here. Thank you.
It's not really a follow-up, or it could be a follow-up to all the questions. What I want to know was, why did you, as NDA, got that 70 million short from treasury? Because normally there are reasons when less money is given to, you know, outbosses or dark entities. There was something that you couldn't prove to them, or you didn't do correctly.
The accounting office just ended, so I'm sure you can give us clarity on why the 70 million rand shortfall on the NDA's budget. Honourable Member Bula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, we want to thank the presenter for a very, very extensive presentation. We also welcome the statement by the Honourable Minister in dealing with the appointment. It is of paramount importance. I think it deals with the poverty in its different spheres as well. Much has been said, but Chairperson, I would like to know that the presentation indicated that assistance to civil societies that are struggling. Can you mention some of your cases that has benefited out of your process? The other concern is around your policy directives. Is it addressing the core issues of your mandate? Chairperson, have you experienced any fraudulent aspects of organizations or NGOs applying for funding and the project was not completed or delivered? Indeed, Chairperson, the growth of a country relies on the knowledge industry. And the presentation alluded to profoundly youth development. What is your progress in terms of youth entrepreneurship? I might be out of order, Chairperson, but I just want for clarity purposes. When you refer to vulnerable groups, in the rural areas, there are many senior citizens that are struggling and battling and do not receive funding. Maybe you could perhaps touch on that, and perhaps maybe they are not following the criteria, etc. And finally, most importantly, is how are you going to fulfill your mandate in terms of your alignment or synchronization with municipalities and the IDP when you have a shortfall in your budget? Thank you, Jeff.
Any other members? Okay. Ms. Issel and the accounting officer, the NDA Act was to be amended. Is that on the cards? I think it's to eliminate the duplication in the Act with regards to social development and the NDA. When is that going to take place? I want to share the same concern around the 70 million rand shortfall. Could you explain that to us? Where is the 70 million rand go? Is it a once off? Kind of a trade-off agreement, which is a one-off phenomenon, and what I would like to know is, you're going to have a 70 million rand shortfall. Are you looking at other alternatives, donor funding, engaging with your corporates in getting additional funding, or in going into partnership with them around development programs? Then the issue of ECDs, the funding of ECDs. There was laws and standards developed and adopted by social development in the toolbar on ECD centers. ECD falls within the domain of provinces and child development as such. What role do you see for yourself is it in terms of capacity building? Are you looking at the building capacity of the ECDs, or are you looking at improving the infrastructure of ECDs, or is it a programmatic intervention that you're looking at? I would like to have more clarity, because and if the accounting officer can just also just give me clarity on that issue, because I think the meeting needs to be clarified. There's going to be no duplication of function, so that you have funds going towards a function that has already been covered in terms of budgeting in the provinces. I think that's really important. For EPWP, ECDs have been targeted with learnership through the EPWP program. I think they've also targeted approach in provinces in terms of the upgrading of welfare infrastructure towards ECDs. And I know that that is part of the social development program. Whether it's a long term that is forthcoming, whether it's current, I'm sure you can give us clarity on that. But I think it's only fair that the committee be clarified on the role of the NDA vis-a-vis the role of the department, the provincial department of social development around that. Then I'm very interested also in what Honourable Member Lamula said when she called, and about the projects that are not in existence but they're listed as projects. Could you give us clarity on that? Especially, I think the close-out reports of projects is very important when it comes to project management. The issue of your risk, because when you establish a project, there's a measure of risk involved. So it could fail, it could not. When you leave it alone to operate it, it could fall flat. So I think those issues are really important. If you can't provide us with the issue around the Wittenberg now and the Tozer Field in the Trollbach and the Leerstorp, I think the committee needs to be brought on board at the next meeting, even if it's in writing, and then come to us on these matters so that we can get clarity on this issue. So, could you respond to these questions first? Yes, you can. Thank you very much. I'll start with the disabilities. So we have disabilities in our projects. We have projects specifically focused on disabilities. If the meeting wants, I can also produce a list of the projects that we have focusing on disabilities and people with disabilities, but internally, we are not per se focusing on a specific type of disability. We're not saying we're not going to have a blind person, but we are trying to, when we do our efforts, when we recruit, we prioritize for disabled people. We are aware of that disabled people reach a glass ceiling and then they just don't go any further, and it's just basically for statistics. And the NDA, part of our values and part of our the program that we are developing is to see how we can overcome that. They must be trained, they must be received, all other requirements, performance managed as everybody else in the organization, and they're treated exactly the same. Especially sometimes with the special requirements, if they need a specific chair, we give them a specific chair. Sometimes it's expensive. In our case, we are trying to get a specific chair. The evacuee chair, maybe, if you know about the OSH Act that we are trying to purchase, and etc. So we are trying to implement all those things in not only in head office but in our provinces, and it becomes quite a bit difficult sometimes because we're empty, we don't buy them, and we don't always get the land or the cooperation in this respect. So we're working on some of those issues in the provinces. Facing challenges, how are we going to overcome it? I think all of them.
we have specific challenges, not only internally, but also externally with our project. What we do with, let's say, our project, the challenges are brought up by AG. They are raised by the AG. They are raised by internal audits. Similarly to, let's say, somebody didn't follow the procurement procedures, it's picked up. There are three things. There's more than three things. But what we do, first of all, the AG and internal audit reports are followed up on a monthly basis by myself. So what I do, I take all AG reports since 2007, and I've got a list, and I follow that up every single month for the executives. We don't have any left, but that's one of the issues I do. That report goes to the audit committee, and we discuss the progress against those AG issues, etc. I have financial reports that come to me on a monthly basis, and I insist on it, like reconciliation, bank reconciliation, which now mustn't be done on a monthly basis, but must be done on a weekly basis, etc. All reconciliations I check, and I make sure that we don't have any suspense accounts, etc. I pick up issues that way, and it goes to the audit committee again, and we also have a finance task team where we discuss these measures. So, with regards to challenges, we try, I can assure you that the NDA is trying to overcome both internal and external challenges. External challenges we have facing our money problems. That's one of our problems. We have external challenges to projects. We're not always in control of what happens out there in projects. If they follow the governance, if they don't follow the governance. So we try with our monitoring and evaluations and the tools we have in the NDA to overcome those challenges. So I'm going to, for the sustainability of the project, I'm going to come to the project you specifically mentioned, and one of the members mentioned now. This is the sustainability of the project. NDA struggles with the sustainability of projects also. It's one of our challenges. But this year we are developing a tool or mechanism to say these are the factors that will depend on our what we define as sustainability of the project. And it's not always profitability. It can be one factor, but we don't have the tool yet. We are developing a tool, and it's in progress. We started this year with it. The sustainability of projects go beyond just the tool. It goes to say, what is NDA's function with monitoring post-funding? How can the NDA take this cooperative and take it to an SME level? How can the NDA take this NGO to a different level? How can the marketing aspect comes into it? And some of our discussions, we have various discussions in private markets with regards to insurance, maybe, old mutual, I mean, recently. With regards, how can we get a rebate on the insurance for one of our for the vehicles, and some of our projects have got vehicles, and for insurance for break-ins, because there's break-ins in a lot of our things get stolen in our projects, etc. So what we're trying to do is the sustainability of the project is a long-term project that we have on our books. It doesn't only say the tools, but it also goes about the marketing, it goes about post-funding support we give, etc. So a document by the end of the next year will be developed to say this is what the NDA is going to do. We don't have that at the moment. We just focus on what we do, and that is the post-operative, the post-funding employment opportunities we create. The fund that I spoke about, we established a fund, and a sustainability fund, set the impact assessment, and assisting projects after refunding. Monitoring and evaluation, yes, is funded, and it's supposed to be done. We've got, since this year, we have a plan on monitoring and evaluation. When I get a plan, I got it in the beginning of the year, it was submitted to the subcommittee. These are the projects within each province, and this is when it is planned to have monitoring and evaluation. Yes, I have an issue with monitoring and evaluation, and I have numerous requests as to when we're going to do monitoring and evaluation of that project. But I must also say, during the year, the NDA has got a program, let me say, where we fund a project for 3 years. If the project is older than that, we have a problem with it. But we have a policy in place. This is one of our ways we overcome our challenges, which is called a write-back policy. That if the project don't fulfill our obligations as required by government, as AG, internal audit, etc., if they don't fulfill our requirements, they don't do the budget, they don't, for some or other reason, they don't open a bank account, they don't sign the contract for the NDA, we can't give them the funds. And our policy, this right back policy, indicates in certain instances, there are 5 instances, and I don't have this in mind, but there are 5 instances where we write those funds back. And then we reapply it to projects directly. And it's called our write-back policy, been approved by the board, exists, we reviewed it recently, the AG has seen it, and the AG recommends it. We have to ensure that the government gets value for money, and this is one of our tools where we ensure government gets value for money. When we send you, and I'm going to ask your indulgence to assist you because I'm going to write back to you and to put the minister's office. When we sent you that report, we had 400 projects on our books. Subsequent to that, we have, and probably over the weekend I looked at the report, we have 366 projects on our report now, on our books now, live projects, because some of them have been closed out, paid off, because some have been written off, because it didn't meet the conditions of the NDA. These projects that are written off goes to the board and reasons for these projects right back, which you will see in the annual report, goes and the board recently put a stop to one of the write backs because they didn't understand why they're writing back and they couldn't see why the NDA didn't do more. And those are the questions that come from the board, and management has to go back to ensure that we do everything we can to keep that project open. So for this year, last year we didn't have a lot of write-backs, but for this year we tried to get the old project cleaned up. If we owe them, we had to pay them, and this was a special project with us. If they are not sustainable, if we can't fund them, if there are issues like conflict, the main important person, and something I can give you the reason, the main person of the project who was running the project isn't there anymore, left the project, there's nobody to run. But in some cases, the projects are for us to take the money back because they just can't use it. In some instances, the project has changed their mind. They don't want to do this project anymore. And I can give this report to the committee, to you, Chair. So we have written back, the first amount was 12 million rand. The amount that's going to the board now on Friday is 3 million rand. So there's 16 million rand from projects that has been written back for the year. And why we have that, it must go to the board, because the board approves these projects, it must go to the board, and it goes to financial statements. Why I'm mentioning these projects, is it could be that these projects are included, maybe one of the projects. I'm not sure if it is. What I am going to ask the committee members afterwards to take this project down, the name, and I will specifically refer to you in charge and the minister's office as to what is going on with that project. And what if it is that monitoring and evaluation hasn't taken place for some other reason, and it is the NDA's fault, I will also tell you what action will be taken in this regard and is responsible. So with that, I will just ask the committee to indulge. I can't actually, I don't know these projects offhand, so I will give you back in next week.
Turn up, if we just run and see this short time. I'm going to give you 3 minutes to wrap up. Mm-hmm. I'll give over to the accounting officer to go through the
minutes. I'm not sure if I can address the 42% shortfall. Maybe. What happened in the shortfall, the NDA's business process again, I must say, first of all, the NDA is not the only department that the budget was cut. I think most of the departments had the same effect, and some projects were not approved, etc., etc. However, in the NDA's case, what happened is that we pay over the tranche of that, so we have to keep that money in our books until the time comes for monitoring and evaluation. It's approved, and then we just pay the second tranche and the third tranche. The project that was approved in February, if they sign their contract, we still pay this month. If they didn't sign the contract for some other reason, we keep that money. And the National Treasury's problem was that we have that money in our coffers. And they couldn't, they said, must us allow that to pass before we can vacate. It was a wonderful thing. I can't guarantee that. I'm not sure what the government is going to do. So that was that situation in Jefferson. Wonderful to Jefferson. I've got so many questions to answer. Maybe I can just do it in the ECDs. We are going to partner with the DSD. We're not only focusing on... We are going to GSD to ask them, what problems do you have in which areas, and in all 9 provinces with which ECDs, and basically focus on those ECDs to uplift them and integrate. What we're trying to do is not duplicate efforts, but to assist the GSD in their implementation of efforts, but also in certain areas where there are no, and we identify there are no ECDs, we're going to create them from scratch, assist the community to create them. So they are general, and all of the above, actually, when you said capacity building, improving the teachers, the children, and the infrastructure, so all of the issues that they have, we're going to look at, not just one. Just the NDA carries the risk, government carries the risk, actually, and that's why we have to be so strict with government. We have a right path policy, we have a standard operating procedure policy, etc., etc., because we carry the risk. Fraud happens. We have got a list of projects, and maybe, Chair, I will also forward that. Where we currently have projects that have are being investigated, and fraud are issued, and that is also why one of the reasons why we don't transfer further funds. I will stop with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The acting CEO of the NDA was kind enough to deal with a question relating to the shortfall. I hope that that response has been found to be satisfactory. With regard to the amendments of the NDA Act, we have submitted as part of the list of pieces of legislation or amendments we wish to introduce into Parliament. The NDA is part of that, and we are looking at a holistic amendment of the NDA Act to deal with matters of governance, but including other practical matters that are dealt with in the Act at the present time. So that is certainly on the cards, and it will be coming through. There was also a question raised with regard to an apparent duplication between what the NDA currently does and what the provinces are doing. I think we've had some discussions with the NDA, and our sense at this stage is that the NDA has now set its mind on becoming more and more an endowment to civil society organizations, rather than being in the competitive space with what provinces are doing. In a sense, more and more the focus of the NDA will be on ensuring capacity building for civil society organizations, as opposed to duplicating what provinces are doing. That's not going to be an abrupt process that will happen immediately, but it's something that will evolve, and we have our eyes set on that as well. So we do recognize that in the meantime, there will be apparent areas of duplication. but it's a matter that we're attending to. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks. Very quickly, just an addition. What is the strategy NDA to raise funds? What are the other sources? We're looking at various sources, Honourable Chair, one of them being to really unpack what is in the Lotteries Act. That aspect of poverty eradication and distribution of funds to programs of this nature. So we have started engaging with the Ministry of Trade and Industry as well as Economic Development to identify that fair, look at NDA being the recipient of these funds, so that through some acquired knowledge and ability to monitor and to distribute funds to various NGOs, we could do that. But we have also begun engaging the social corporate investment entities, the CSI, both, for purposes of ensuring that we really pool our resources, and that we do also to support the entire program of anti-poverty strategy, which is coordinated as a deputy president. This we see as an institution together perhaps with IDT as the drivers of that once we have accumulated those funds through the CSI and the CSI. So those are the two. Just very quickly, Chair, also, I'm sure honourable members would recall that this year we have just been told that we are getting off the crisis, the financial crisis, and this is a major reason why there has been this budget cut. We hope that going forward, because this is an institution, one of the institutions that really does poverty eradication, distribution, and empowerment of the CSOs, as the situation improves, it will also improve. However, as we're saying, we're not quite intending to rely on government funding only, but to stretch our hands and really see where we can be able to find better ability to move. I think that covers. I'm not sure if there are any issues. The issue of IDP alignment, it is in the strategy also in the document where it's indicated that there is that alignment with municipalities and what is done there. There's also another matter that was raised about how do we measure the impact that we're doing, as by Honourable Lamula, on whether we're making an impact indeed on poverty. I think honourable members would recall that poverty impact and eradication is not necessarily dealt with at this institution level. Rural development now does that. IDT has been doing that. And as government, generally, there has been continuously that kind of impact analysis on poverty, which is what we saw as through the product of the recent release document of how we've been able to impact on poverty in general in South Africa. And this is the document that indicates even the growing inequalities, although we have actually made an impact on poverty. However, there are growing inequalities within our society. So that study on its own has been done at government-wide level, not just at NDA level, because we believe that it may not quite be accurate to measure just the impact done by one institution as opposed to the entire government, because we work as a collective, as I said earlier. Thanks.
They have provided that to us previously.
Yeah.
that is now new financial year for you. So can you provide us with the additional all in the whole list? Just the additional. Yeah.
So that will then contain even the youth issues.
I'm going to give you
my question was not answered. The one that how do they fund the project? Do they give them once of funding of and the letting of field full female and male?
That's like every 3 months. It's a period of time, 3 tranches, mostly 3 tranches. And the average time is 24 to 36 months.
And I think she asked for this aggregated data. Perhaps we can get in writing the abstract person. What I want to put with the project is also the status report, the status of the project now. I know we're going to have to go to a person. You want the status report?
Yes.
Kind of 366 projects. But I don't think it will be difficult because you do get those projects. You can do it? Honourable members, and we're going to take a 5 minutes, just a 5 minute body break. But let me take this opportunity to thank the National Development Agency and its board members for being here today and for the presentation. It was an easy flowing presentation, so just thank you very much. And also Honourable Minister and DG for being here. Let's just have a 5 minute break and be back so that we can take the next presentation. Be finishing off at 1 o'clock and not at 12 until the visit. Thank you.
If you enjoy, actually, I'm going to make it with an electronic topic. I'm going to make it with an electronic topic for an electronic topic. Yeah, okay.
Thank you. That I need to go back to the music when I'm
Honourable members, can we start with the second half of our program? Honourable Member Lamula and Mrs. Rashida Isa, why don't you sit next to one another and Honourable members, we now go over to the second half of our presentation, and that is Act 75 of 2008, the Child Justice Act. We requested the department just to take us through the state of readiness of the sector for the implementation of the Act. As we know, the implementation of the Act has been deferred to the 1st of April 2010. Over to yourself, Mrs. Mala. Dr. Nabetwa, are you going to reduce the presentation? DJ is going to do that. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for inviting us to the department to do this presentation, which is on the mandate and the readiness plan of the Department of Social Development to implement for the implementation of the Child Justice Act. I think just introductory remark, I want to say that the Department of Social Development has been involved in the development of this legislation right from the beginning, and we had already started with the implementation of some of its provisions even before it was it was passed as an act by Parliament. The intention was to present the Children's Act as well today, but since there's no time, Chairperson, as we discussed, we'll do it next time when the Portfolio Committee might have a special meeting for the implementation plan for the Children's Act and the Older Persons Act. Ms. Ngumalo, the Chief Director for Social Crime Prevention, will do the presentation on our readiness plan for the Child Justice Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and our Minister and the DG. I'll jump this slide. This slide, I'm trying to show the role of social development within the broader criminal justice system. Members can just look at it. It's just a schematic diagram on our key role from when the crime is taking place, arrest, and until incarceration. The act that I'm going to present, or the readiness, it's really, the act itself is administered by the Department of Justice, but as indicated, we have a key role to play. What is expected from the act from social development is that we need to make sure that we provide assessments for all arrested children by probation officers within 48 hours of arrest. We also expected to provide and fund diversion services, alternatives for children awaiting trial, and also home-based supervision programs. We are also expected to provide residential care facilities, which is, we call it now secure care facilities. And also we need to provide pre-trial and pre-sentence reports during the sentencing period, and also make sure that we provide sentencing options to magistrates. We are also expected to provide prevention services and early intervention services. As indicated by Dr. Mavida, we also have supporting legislation. I must say this Probation Services Act really assisted us as a department to be ready for the implementation of the Child Justice Act. You'll see in Section 4B, it makes reference, it regularizes assessment. So we have begun to do assessment for all children who have been arrested since the promulgation of this particular legislation. Of importance is the Children's Act, which makes mention of the establishment of residential care facilities, which is our secure care in Chapter 13. In terms of human resource, currently we do have 484 full-time probation officers. These officers are specializing in probation work. They're not doing any other work. But we also have social workers who are performing similar duties together with their generic functions. We also have a category of workers, we call them assistant probation officers. They work together with our probation officers. Currently we have 360 of them, which this category of workers are regulated by the Act that I've indicated, the Probation Services Act. We also have a project which we call Volunteer Assistant Probation Officer, which is a learnership program. Currently we have 55 of those students in learnership. When they complete that FET course, they will also become Assistant Probation Officers, so they will add to that number of 360. This is just an indication in terms of per province. Allocate distribution in terms of POs, APOs, and VAPOs. In terms of secure care facilities, we currently have 33 fully functioning secure care facilities with a bed capacity of 2,408. We also have 6 newly built, which are not yet operational, but they've been completed in provinces, with a bed capacity of 320. And then within the MTF, we're also planning 18, which will provide an additional capacity of 1,018. As indicated, the total capacity over the MTF will be 3,808 if we complete the 18 and operationalize the 6, adding to the current. We have also developed a blueprint and norms and standards for secure care facilities to standardize services. Of importance also, Chair, we have established 53 RARs. We call them Reception Assessment and Referral Centers. These centers are mainly in our courts and also police stations. They facilitate the assessment of children immediately after arrest. So for police stations and courts have allocated specific offices for our probation officers to do that function. We are also having 2 one-stop child justice centers, which are mainly run by Justice. But we play a key role because that one stop cannot run without social development. Currently, it's in Mangaung and Nerina. So we have full-time staff that we have employed in those 2 one-stop child justice centers. This is a distribution of how we came up to the 2,408 bed capacity per province. And you will see the number of secure care facilities that are there. We have also distributed a list with contact details and telephone numbers of people in each of the facilities so that members can visit or even communicate with those people in those facilities. In terms of our readiness, if I continue, there's a critical area that the Act is proposing, that we need to develop a diversion accreditation framework. It's basically under Section 52, Section 56, Subsection 2. We are expected to table this framework before the commencement of the Act. The Act commenced 1 April 2010. What we have done, we do have a policy framework draft in place. We also have a prototype accreditation system in place. But looking at our internal processes, we are not going to meet the tabling time of 31st, because the four ministers, in terms of what the Act says, they need to concur with us in terms of with the framework that we have developed. So we are giving ourselves 2 weeks after March. We're saying mid-March we will be able to be done with all the consultative and the written confirmation from all the four ministers in terms of supporting the framework. We were looking at tabling it end of April, but Justice has advised us that because they will be tabling their broader national policy framework for the Child Justice Act in June, why can't it be tabled together? But we will still be advised by our DG and the Minister in that regard. We have also, in preparation for diversion, we have a resource directory that is in place. We have also done an audit of all diversion programs so that we can see where are the gaps. And we also have minimum norms and standards that we have developed, and we have conducted training in all provinces to make sure that we comply. So by the 1st of April, if this framework is not tabled, what we'll be using is the transitional arrangement in Section 98(2), which says the current diversion programs will continue operating until the accreditation is finalized. In terms of diversion register, the Act requires the department to also come up with a diversion register. We do have an electronic diversion register where we will record all children that have been diverted. And the Act also mandates us to have a register for children under 10 years. We also have that register because the Act says all children 10 and under, they are not having a criminal capacity. So, but in case where a police official is coming into contact with a 10-year-old, we need to keep a register for those, and they need to refer them straight to our to their parents or to our probation officer or to a place of safety. We have also have an information management system which will assist us in our child and youth care facilities to keep a data, because there's also a provision in the Act or a requirement that a manager of the secure care center must always make sure that there's information on bed space availability when the child appears in court. So we also have that system that is funded through the IJS program. In terms of training and capacity building, we have conducted a lot of training. We also had developed the probation practice guidelines assisted by UNICEF, targeting our probation practitioners, which is our assistant probation officers, our probation officers, and child and youth care workers that are working in our child and youth care facilities. We are continuing with the training. We're starting one on the 16th, which is today, until the 8th of April, which is funded 100% by UNICEF. We have also internally conducted training on the Child Justice Act itself so that our staff is ready and understand what is it that social development we are expected to deliver. Challenges. We still need 484 probation practitioners, not probation officers alone. So that number includes the supervisors and district coordinators. Currently, this function is performed by those social workers who are doing generic work and even supervisors that are doing generic work and also the district coordinators. But we are saying we need people who will be specializing, because if you have probation officers that are specializing, you also need specialized supervisors. But currently, the people who are supervising these probation officers are also doing other work. So we feel that for us to provide quality service, we still need to really increase the capacity of our workforce. We have made bids to National Treasury to be able to get money to do that, but I think on two occasions we were turned down. That is why for diversion framework, we have been given money by the Department of Justice last year during the adjustment. They gave us money to be able to develop the accreditation system. We also experienced a challenge in terms of the underutilization of our secure care facilities. At a given time in a month, we do have 600 bed space available, but you will find that there are children in prison who are awaiting child aid. But I think with coming into force of this legislation 1 April, we believe that problem will be resolved, because correctional services doesn't want to see those children in their facilities. Accessibility of these facilities also is a challenge. If you look at the geographic spread and where they are, some of them, if you take Mpumalanga, for instance, it's only one, and it's in Hendrina. And people from Komazi, they are complaining that they can't be transporting children to Hendrina. So these are some of the challenges, because Hendrina is never full at a given time. So there's a discussion within the justice cluster in the province to establish a one-stop center there in Hendrina, so that the children who will be transported to Hendrina, they are not expected to go to attend courts in their various magistracies. They will be handled there at the center because of its location. But Mpumalanga is also planning to establish more facilities. We're also experiencing a challenge of more children are committing very serious and violent crimes at a very, very young age. What we're planning to do in terms of addressing the challenge, we will continue engage Treasury in terms of extra resources to strengthen both our resources in terms of human and also expanding the diversion programs. And also the recruitment of social workers and social auxiliary workers, because our probation officers are qualified social workers, and also our assistant probation officers are registered social auxiliary workers with the council. We'll also continue marketing the facilities and explore the issue of a one-stop center model within the cluster with the Department of Justice. I must indicate that currently there's also a plan to establish two more in the Northwest where the Department of Justice will designate our facilities to have a court sitting there. We have also developed a social crime prevention strategy to strengthen our prevention program and early intervention. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. I don't know whether the DG is open to the minister would like to have it. Honorable Minister.
Thanks, Chair. I suppose the honourable members will be delighted to note the progress, and it has not been an easy thing. But I think we can, from our side, assure you that we will certainly, within the required timeline, process those areas where ministers require to make decisions on time. That process is ongoing, and I think it will be concluded on time, as I say. The other issue is the matter appearing on slide 12. I mean, slide 12, Honourable Members, there's just the last bullet point, if you could. I think that more and more children are committing serious violent crimes at a very young age. I just wanted to lift that matter up, that yes, we're talking about preparing to house these children, diversion programs, and so on and so on, in terms of the Children's Act. But this particular clause or this particular sentence says to us that there is a need and to do something together, just in as much as we will be dealing with the issue of development of social crime prevention strategy further, strengthening aspect. But this also touches on an issue of substance abuse and anti-substance abuse, which I think that the police, the committee would need to really take the cognizance of that area. I'm picking it up, Chair, because we're running it as a very, very important program, highlighted, heightened this time. If you look at the Western Cape where we were this past week or Friday, having visited one secure center there, we noted that, well, there were something like, I think, 165 children at a time, quite serious offenses, young and tender age, 14, 17 years of age. And I think there's really an impact what we saw there. There's a lot that's been done. But the reality is that we need to ensure that together we work hard in ensuring that we curb that kind. And majority of those children, by the way, are those who have been enticed to get into substances of whatever sort. So there's a real serious problem, especially here in Northern Cape, as well as in housing. So we really need to maybe jointly to target that program and work on it together.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Any questions from members? Honourable Member Namula.
Chair, my first suggestion is that I propose that this committee visit some of these centres to see for themselves what the conditions are. I think we will do justice to them. And then I'm grateful, and the Minister also elaborated on this the other day in the House, on training of social workers, auxiliary workers, and whatever those are. But there is a difference between a professional social worker and an auxiliary worker. And some issues can only be attended to by a professional social worker. Now, I think there was mentioned an amount of 7,000 plus minus 7,000 in the system in training. But we never spoke on the dropout rate of these students. And I wonder how the dropout rate of these students. And I think somewhere I've read something between, Minister, you must correct me now, between 30 in one of our booklets that we received from social service, 30 to 75% dropout rate. I would like to know the effect, if that is the figure, 30 to 75% dropout rate, how will this impact on what you're trying to implement or trying to do? And then institutions, capacity at institutions can only take in, the intake can only be 300 to 400. I know Yuchanwit is a very popular one, especially for the rural students. And yet every year, so many students have to turn back because they cannot be accommodated. Classes are being formed. My biggest concern, and I'm not being pessimistic, I'm just really being, from an Afrikaans, realistic, optimistic. Concern is the municipalities. How can municipalities live up to what we are expected of them? You know, the challenge on municipalities are huge. And just this morning on the radio news, there were three municipalities in North East already being closed down. Not closed down, under administration, if I'm right. I'm worried that how can municipalities, and you know, the IDP programs of municipalities are really wishless. It's a wish list that never been realized. I'm worried the impact of municipalities not being able to look up to what they need to do in these centers or what is expected of them. How will that challenge be confronted?
Chairperson, I'm looking at page 12, where I'm looking at the two national sectors that matter to treasury through the cluster. And I would like to know from social development, note that their portion of the act, what amount of money do they have the money for their portion, although the sole approach is a cluster approach. And then, Minister, I'd like to say that when it comes to Larina, I must congratulate Justice on it. Although Larina was started by social development itself, because we are sticking stones. And what is said when it comes to diversion programs, you know, it is being done by our social workers there. Because I have quite a write-up, we were there to check the center, and I have quite a write-up on my computer. And then the centres they speak about are centres that we do visit. These of that we have in Port Elizabeth. I was met at the one in East London. Thank you.
On question, I would like to have a list on the, I think it's 484 full-time probation officers with training. I would just like to have the list for the Western Cape of probation officers trained to work in our farm.
I think, thank you very much, Honourable Member Lamula. When I look at the presentation, I think it says somewhere the department has, slide 5. Probation officers. The department has currently appointed 484 full-time probation officers servicing all courts in the country. I'm sure you're referring to the sector. Is it the social development sector or the Department of Social Development nationally? Then the sense that I'm not getting from this presentation is whether the sector is ready for the implementation from the first of April. Are you reasonably ready? Fairly ready? And if you look at the challenges on page 12 and 13, Honourable Minister and DG and the rest of the team, you say that secure care centres are actually underutilised.
And I think there you need to have some bilaterals with the Department of Justice, and usually with your chief magistrate in the area, to refer the children to the security centers. Obviously, also then with the police. And they usually have, they can establish child justice committees and then come together and discuss issues there. I think I've made a recommendation previously to the department. And that, I think, will then also create a consciousness that will go down to your magisterial level, to your magistrates, to have these referrals, and to your police stations and so on. I think also the issue around places of safety and security centers needs to be differentiated, because they play different roles. And that we have to be careful that places of safety are not substituted for secure care centers. Now, when we look at the provincial spread of secure care centers, it is concerning. I think that a province like Mpumalanga only have one secure care center, because it's a huge province. Now, Honorable Magagula, how many people live in Mpumalanga? How many million? But it's more than 1 million. Your voters are more than 1 million voters. Am I correct? Yeah, and it's widespread. It's a rural province. So if you look at the implementation of the Act, you're going to have problems in terms of administrative justice issues, because your parents will then have to travel very far to reach some security center. So I think what the committee should note and is that we should really look into, and maybe something for us to discuss, because that we should look at really advocating for more secure care centers for our provinces, especially if you look at the province like Mpumalanga, where you only have one secure care center. That will make the implementation of the Act so much easier. But then I want to come to another issue. Now the issue of these two issues that I want to raise. The minister mentioned the fact of violent crimes that's related to substance abuse, and we've heard when the minister responded in Parliament around there's a scary picture out there for us in terms of the youth and the abuse of substances. But you have children that are awaiting trial. Can the department just respond to us in that regard? Children awaiting trial. While they're awaiting trial, can they go for rehabilitation at the same time? Because I know that's not the reason. That's when you are on awaiting trial as an adult, you can't go on treatment. So is that the same for children? Coming to probation services, does the department see that as an area of specialization? Maybe just a comment from DZ itself with a You are looking at the review of your probation services as a whole, with your link to justice besides the Child Justice Act itself, because I think that is the Act was really just to renew the whole sector that dealt with juvenile justice, but just looking at probation services, are you looking at reviewing the whole probation services and then linking up with the justice sector and your
yeah, especially your partners in the justice sector, but especially with your judiciary and as well as your magistrates. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Maybe I should start with your questions because they were left. In terms of the readiness of the sector, yes, we are all ready. Last 2 weeks, we were presenting also at the Portfolio Committee for Justice all the government departments that are responsible in implementing the legislation. So we were all found to be 90% ready to implement the legislation. In terms of secure care that are being utilized, yeah, it is a cluster concern. We have raised it at that level, and they are really attending to it because justice is also saying they need to train their magistrates. But the challenge they have is that they cannot tell magistrates what to do. But what they need to indicate to them is the requirements of the legislation. So I think when first April, we will see changes, because what social development does, we make recommendations to say, we recommend that this child can await trial at our facility, but the magistrate can decide otherwise. That is why we find some children are awaiting trial in correctional services, which is, but still we don't leave it there. When children are sent to prison, we have an MATD task, they call it Management of Awaiting Trial Detainees, which is chaired by DCS. On a monthly basis, we sit, we look at the number of children that are there, we reassess them and take them back to court again to plead with the magistrate to say, can't you look for another alternative placement for the child? And really, it is working very well. But we're saying we don't want to go to that long route. Let them take our recommendation when we make them, when the child first appears in court. And I think the legislation is also bringing in a key element of preliminary inquiry, where a magistrate will convene an informal hearing. So at that point, that's where both the probation officer, the prosecutor, and the magistrate will decide on the suitable placement of the child. So that's why I'm saying, come 1 April, we're thinking positive, we're thinking things will change, but current status doesn't really look good. The issue of places of safety being separated from secure care, we acknowledge that, because some places of safety, as we speak, they have a wing where they accommodate children awaiting trial, but they are dealt with them differently than the children who are placed there in terms of the children's court inquiry, because the ones that are awaiting trial, they are there through a criminal procedure act processes. So the blueprint and the norms and standards that we have developed really forces us to really separate the two, because they're performing different functions, and that we are busy with. The spread of secure care is a challenge, as I've indicated, the Mpumalanga one, though there's a plan to have two, we know building a secure care can take 2 to 3 years. Now, what will happen come first April? We have engaged the province. They are also looking at an overnight house in the Enhlabeni district, which will cater Nkomazi, Bushbuck Ridge, and the Barberton area. But Hendrina will be, for now, the only place secure care that is available, because it is accessible to Kwamhlanga area, that area of Kangala. They are managing to transport children, but if you go far to Piet Retief, it's really, really a challenge in the Nkomazi area. We will appreciate any intervention that the committee can also advocate for more in that province, more specifically. Children awaiting trial, yes, they can go for treatment, because if they await trial in our secure care, they go through various programs. So if they are found to be having a problem of substance abuse, they are subjected to that program. If they have a problem, maybe they are there in terms of sexual offenses, related matters, they are also subjected to a program that will really assist them in that area. So a child is assessed before a referral is made to any particular program to find suitability. Probation services is currently, we're working towards a speciality. We are completing regulations now in terms of specialization, but it will be a speciality within social work. So it won't be a profession on its own. A profession will be first a social work, then you specialize in probation work. So even the assistant probation officers, They are not professionals. They are paraprofessionals. They work, they assist the probation officers to do their job. So they register as social auxiliary worker, but they have also another training that makes them specializing in probation work. That's why we call them assistant probation officers. We are also looking at reviewing of our Probation Services Act so that it is broad enough, because probation services is not only about children awaiting trial, it's even about others who have committed crime, also looking at what interventions can be there for others who have committed crime. So next year it's our target to be able to review the current legislation, even to align it with the new Child Justice Act in some instances. The other questions, the issue of budget, do we have the money? Yes, we have the money. What I've indicated in terms of the budget, we wanted to increase because resources are never enough. We wanted to increase and expand on our services. But as indicated, we have started a bit long ago. This legislation was developed around 2001-2002. It was a bill since then until it was promulgated last year. So as a department, we didn't fold our arms. We started working and preparing for the implementation of the very act. And when it was costed in 2002, all departments were given money then to be able to prepare for the implementation. But we know that environments change and needs change. That is why we want to add more resources to be able to be comfortable in providing our services. We can provide the budget that is available to the members. I don't have the figures with me per province and also at national, because we do have budgets that have been allocated for the implementation of the Child Justice Act or probation services in its entirety. The role of municipalities in making sure that we support the facilities. I can say for now what we do, we work with municipalities in terms of planning, when we plan for the building of such facilities, because they're the ones who are providing land and also make sure that they provide the services. But the role, when now it's operational, they don't have really much key role. They just participate in the committees that are responsible for monitoring the running of the facility. So in terms of 1 April, I think we will be ready and there will be no problem in terms of making sure that the facilities are ready in accommodating children. The issue of scholarship, my DDG indicated she will deal with that one. Can I transfer the
train? Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll respond to the questions on the dropout rate of with regard to the students who are studying social work on the scholarship program. We had a meeting last week, in fact, with the different universities. Social work department, the official from social work departments at different universities, to discuss issues such as the dropout rate. And the way they explained to us is that it's not a dropout as such. You find that the students will stay in 1 year. And if they fail, they drop out from the scholarship, because if they fail, the scholarship doesn't continue. And then they'll pay the fees for themselves and come back on the scholarship once they have passed that specific year or the specific main subjects that they had failed the previous year. We need to do some evaluation to look at the dropout rates per se, whether they are a main concern or not, because we find that young people at times they use the scholarship, you find they want to do follow another discipline, but they will use the scholarship program so that they can enter university, and during the course of that year they look for funds to follow, you know, the discipline that they really, the degree that they want to do. So it's I don't know whether from the language of government we should use that as a dropout rate or not, because it's giving young people an opportunity to enter a tertiary institution and to look for other bursaries while they are there. And we, as a department, we are not really worried about this dropout rate, because since 2008, and
last year, 2008 and 2009, we produced 2,424 social workers through the scholarship. And currently we've got 6,284 young people studying at universities on the scholarship. In fact, the population of social work students at universities, most of them are on the scholarship or on the scholarship program. But we will investigate, and once that investigation is finalized, we'll come back to the portfolio committee to give you the numbers. The issue of intake, there are two reasons why at times the universities cannot take more than they can manage, mainly because of lack of staff, lack of lecturers to teach. You find there must be a ratio, a specific ratio that is preferred at the university, like one lecturer to 30 students. Otherwise, if they take more, we might find ourselves with social workers that have been trained during this period and are not capable to do the work. So we need to look at quality. But the Department of Education as well, we realized, had not recognized social work as a scarce skill. So they had not made sufficient resources for the training of social workers. But the minister has since written to the Minister of Education, just alerting them of this, so that more resources can be allocated to the social work departments that are training social work students, so that more lecturers, you know, and staff can be made available for this training. The bursary fund also is also limiting, because we can only provide bursaries for so many students. You know, we cannot exceed the number that we have. These 6,000 students that are now at the different universities, we've calculated their number in terms of their intake, in terms of the amount of money that we have. Currently, we have 231.9 million rand for the scholarship program. I don't know whether that's answered. And yeah, for this financial year. And for last financial year, I think the amount was 210 million.
Chair, just one small thing. I thought that for purpose of record, we should correct the statistics, the figures given by Honorable Lamula later on, earlier on, of that of 7,000 social workers.
Minister, that's all we're going to add. I can the DJ, it's all covered. Now, thank you very much. Is there a follow-up? In conclusion.
I forgot to say something small. When it comes to the sentence of asking for listen, that's crucial in any sentence. The pure case sentence, that sentence is incomplete. Because when we were there, we were at the 2 million that was out and supposed to be a secure staircase center. Last year, the woman that in charge of the center said nothing was done. So I would like the department to know this. Thank you.
Although that's a provincial competence, so secure care center is a provincial. Yeah. For noting? Yeah. So there's no ceiling in a secure care center. Yeah. Now, if there's no ceiling, it means that the children escape through the ceiling. Yeah. So it poses a risk to the security of the children in the center.
So, I just want to know, the centers listed for the Western Cape, are these centers all completed? Are some of them up and running? And the balance of it, will you be operating from the third place? That's what I'd like to know. Thank you. there's one additional one. I think there are four in Western Cape. They're intending to build two more. One is almost being completed next to the one in Mitchell's Bay. So there has to be the sixth one coming. As far as the plans are concerned for now. And I think that's the highest number in the province. With that six. We are, however, also looking forward to increasing also in other provinces.
Thanks, Honourable Member. I think, so those, if you look at the list, Honourable Member Lambula, just look at me. This one. Yeah. You've got it. Yeah. And then, yeah, so the one that is coming to you actually blessed with another one. We've been migrating children towards other provinces to the West Cape. They've been very helpful over the years. DJ?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now that I know the committee will be visiting some of these, I thought perhaps it may be prudent to alert the members of the committee in advance that they shouldn't be alarmed when they get to some of the centres to find that some of them might tend to resemble a correctional facility, especially in certain provinces, precisely because of the nature of the crimes in which some of those children are involved. So that when I know that in the Western Cape in particular, that there are some other centres where there's cooperation between correctional services and ourselves with regard to availing some of their waters, because especially young people who are involved in violent crimes and gangs, if you don't have waters, or is that what they are called, the gangs can easily walk into the centers and rescue those young people. So it's very important that the at least members of the committee are aware well in advance before they go to those centers.
No, thank you very much, DG, for that word of caution. I'm sure the members have noted that. That's why I also refer to the issue of the ceiling. You will see all kinds of bull nose roofing and all that kind of security measures at the security center. And they're not there for decoration. Honourable members, we've come to the end of our presentation. And also the meeting. If there's any questions, I'm sure you can pose them in writing and to the department, and I'm sure that the minister's office will gladly relay to the department to answer some of it first. The committee will be visiting some of these secure care centres, and we'll be discussing that and mapping out our visit. So we'll be informing the department, Honourable Minister and DJ. We hope that we can do it with you, in conjunction with you. With that, Honourable Members, the meeting is adjourned.